I want to welcome everyone to this teleclass on exploring the new hand hygiene guidelines. My name is Paul Weber, and I am really pleased that you joined me on this call today, particularly if this is your first teleclass experience. To make teleclass education possible, we are grateful to have the support of some excellent, and I would even say visionary, companies like today's sponsor, Dev Medical Hand Hygiene. They make it possible to offer these teleclasses for a low registration fee, and they also allow us to give unlimited free access to healthcare professionals in developing nations. Thanks very much, Mike, and please pass along my thanks to your team at Deb. Now, before I introduce our faculty, there are two small disclaimers to make. I would like to note that teleclass sponsors provide support to the teleclass, and they are not directly supporting the teleclass presenter. And secondly, Weber Training does not promote or advertise any particular product. If a product name is mentioned during the course of this teleclass, it should not be taken as an endorsement. Having said all that, I'm honored to be sharing this time with our very distinguished faculty, Dr. John Boyce. Dr. Boyce's work has been referred to in at least half a dozen teleclasses this year, half a dozen that I can think of, and along with Dr. Didier Pate, he developed and published a new CDC guideline for hand hygiene. Most of you have probably seen that. As you can see by the title slide, Dr. Boyce comes to us from the infectious diseases section of the Hospital of St. Raphael and is a professor of medicine at Yale University in Connecticut. Dr. Boyce lectures all over the world, and on your behalf, I will thank him for making the time to give this teleclass. He has some fantastic insights and information to bring to us, so I'll let him get to it. To give the teleclass, guideline for hand hygiene in healthcare settings, I give you Dr. John Boyce.
Hello, I'm happy to have the opportunity to talk to you today about hand hygiene in healthcare settings. And because I have a lot of material I want to cover, let's go ahead and get started with the first slide, which is entitled Importance of Hand Contamination in Transmission of Healthcare-Associated Pathogens. Now, I hope that many of you listening today have either heard about or maybe even read about the classic studies done by Semmelweis and Oliver Wendell Holmes over 150 years ago. Both these physicians independently documented the important role of contaminated hands in transmission of diseases in hospitals. And more recent studies have shown conclusively that healthcare-associated pathogens are often transmitted by the hands of healthcare workers. So for these reasons, hand washing has been considered one of the most important measures for preventing the spread of pathogens in healthcare facilities. And this being the case, you might expect that healthcare workers would be very careful about washing their hands when recommended. Next slide. Well, this slide shows how often healthcare workers actually wash their hands when recommended. The figure shows the percent adherence to healthcare workers to recommended hand washing practices on the y-axis. And the data is from 32 observational studies conducted between 1981 and 2000. And as you can see, despite publication of hand washing guidelines from CDC in 1985 and by the Association for Professionals in Infection Control, or APIC, in 1988 and 1995, there was really no improvement in hand washing adherence over this 20-year period. And in fact, on average, only about 40% of healthcare workers wash their hands when recommended. Next slide. Well, this slide shows some of the factors that influence hand washing adherence. in a large study that involved more than 2,800 observations, Dr. Pite and colleagues used multivariate analysis and determined that there were the following factors that were associated with poor hand-washing compliance among healthcare workers. These factors included times when the intensity of care was high, that is, that nurses and doctors had high workloads, and in these time periods, they literally did not have enough time to wash their hands frequently. Their study showed that nurses had higher compliance rates than doctors, and other healthcare workers were sort of in between nurses and doctors. Compliance was also poor during weekdays when things tend to be very busy in hospitals and in intensive care units where there are many opportunities for hand hygiene. And compliance was even poor during procedures that were thought to be at high risk of contamination. Well, since time is a major factor here, Drs. Voss and Widmer looked at this issue further. They did some observations and found that it took nurses about an average of 62 seconds to get to a sink, wash and dry their hands, and return to patient care. And they determined that if people washed their hands for about 10 seconds, and that if the ICU had 12 nurses working per shift, that if hand washing compliance was at 100% level, it would require 16 hours of nursing time per shift just to do hand washing. In contrast, if there was an alcohol hand rub that was available at patient bedsides and that nurses took about 15 seconds to use this product, that 100% compliance with hand hygiene would require only about 4 hours of nursing time per shift, or about one-fourth that required for hand washing. So these investigators actually questioned whether or not hand washing is actually practical. Next slide. Another factor that can adversely affect hand washing compliance is poor access to sinks and hand washing facilities. On the left hand side of this slide, you see that there's a sink in the corner of this intensive care unit room. But the image on the right shows that the sink is totally hidden behind the patient's bed and behind intravenous pumps so that it is completely inaccessible to this nurse. And in fact, the nurse told me that she hardly ever used the sink for hand washing because she couldn't get to it. So this is another deterrent to hand washing. Irritant contact dermatitis due to frequent exposure to soap and water is also another deterrent to frequent hand washing. This picture shows the hand of a physician who used a popular non-antimicrobial soap to wash his hands at work during a two-week period in December when the air tends to be fairly dry. And after 2 weeks of soap and water hand washing, he literally had bleeding from his knuckles and very irritated skin. So this is clearly, at least in some areas, a deterrent to frequent hand washing. Next slide. To look at this issue further, we actually conducted a prospective comparison of the effects of hand washing versus using an alcohol hand gel on the skin condition of nurses' hands. We put the alcohol hand gel dispensers outside each patient's room or in the patient's cubicle if they were in an intensive care unit. Soap was located at all sinks. skin irritation and dryness of nurses' hands were assessed by self-assessment by the participating nurses, which were from several different wards. Then we did a visual assessment by a study nurse, and then we measured electrical capacitance of the skin on the nurse's hands, which is a measure of skin hydration. Next slide. This slide shows the electrical capacitance readings on the y-axis. And on this slide, the lower the number, the more dry the nurse's hands were. Now, in this study, it was a two-phase study. Initially, half the nurses were randomized to use soap and water, and the other half were supposed to use the alcohol hand gel. And then after 2 weeks, the groups switched products so that the nurses who were initially using soap and water started using the alcohol hand gel for the second two-week trial. Now, on this slide, you can see, if any of you can see in color, it's the lower red line, is that when nurses were washing their hands with soap and water, their skin got drier and drier. But when the same nurses used the alcohol hand gel, as shown in the upper line, their hands did not become drier. This study has been confirmed by several others now, and so it's pretty apparent that actually a well-formulated alcohol hand rub causes less skin irritation and dryness than frequent hand washing with soap and water. Next slide. Now, some of you may not have heard anything about alcohol hand disinfection when you were doing your training, and you may actually wonder if it actually cleans your hands very well. Well, this slide shows the results of 20 studies that looked at the efficacy of different hand hygiene agents in reducing bacterial counts on hands. And for each study, the least effective agent is shown on the left, and the most effective is shown on the right. And for any of you that can see this in color, the dark bars on the left column are almost all plain soap and water, indicating that in almost every study it was the least effective agent. On the other hand, alcohol, which in color is shown in red or hatched red, if there was some chlorhexidine added to the alcohol, in virtually every study, the alcohol-based products were the most effective. So that if your colleagues in your hospital or other healthcare facility ask you if the alcohol actually works, you can tell them that the alcohol-based products work better than either plain soap and water or antimicrobial soap and water. Next slide. Another advantage of the alcohol-based hand rubs is that there are several studies that have shown that if you make these products readily available to healthcare workers, that you can improve hand hygiene compliance. This slide shows the percent compliance during 7 hospital-wide surveys conducted at the University of Geneva hospitals over a period of about 3 years. And you can see that the overall percent compliance gradually improved in this hospital. And actually, most of the improvement could be attributed to the bars on the top, which were due to hand disinfection using an alcohol hand rinse. So this study and several others published after it have shown that making these products readily available to healthcare workers improves hand hygiene compliance. Next slide. So when compared to traditional soap and water hand washing, alcohol-based hand rubs have the following advantages. They take less time to use. They can be made more accessible than sinks. They actually cause less skin irritation and dryness. They're more effective at reducing bacteria on hands and making alcohol-based hand rubs readily available to personnel has led to improved hand hygiene practices. Next slide. Well, because hand washing compliance had been poor for so many years, in 1999, the HCPAC SHEA APIC IDSA Hand Hygiene Task Force was formed. And then Didier Pite and I conducted a review of over 800 references dealing with hand hygiene in healthcare settings. And in November of 2001, a draft of an evidence-based guideline was published for public comment in the United States. And then the guideline was revised based on those public comments and on additional input from the Food and Drug Administration, CDC, and task force members. Next slide. Well, the final guideline was published in the MMWR in October of 2002. And the director of the CDC, Julie Gerberding, held a press conference to announce publication of the guideline. The guideline was also made available for downloading from websites at CDC, at a website that we set up at Hospital of St. Raphael, and websites at SHEA, APIC, and IDSA. Next slide. Now I want to run through the recommendations from the guideline. The guideline recommends that personnel wash their hands with a non-antimicrobial soap and water or with an antimicrobial soap and water when their hands are visibly dirty or contaminated with proteinaceous material or are visibly soiled with blood or other body fluids. They should also wash with soap and water before eating, after using a restroom, or if exposure to Bacillus anthracis, the cause of anthrax, is either suspected or proven. Now, if your hands are not visibly soiled, the guideline recommended that you use an alcohol-based hand rub for routinely decontaminating hands in the following situations. Before having direct contact with patients, before putting on sterile gloves when inserting a central intravascular catheter, before inserting indwelling urinary catheters, peripheral vascular catheters, or other types of invasive devices that don't actually require a surgical procedure. Next slide. Now, you should also use an alcohol hand rub after contact with the patient's intact skin, like you might do if you're taking a pulse or doing a blood pressure, after contact with body fluids or excretions, mucous membranes, or non-intact skin or wound dressings, as long as your hands are not visibly soiled, or if moving from a contaminated body site to a clean body site during patient care. Next slide. Also use a hand rub after contact with inanimate objects like blood pressure cuffs, side rails of the bed, or other medical equipment that are in the immediate vicinity of the patient, and use an alcohol hand rub after removing gloves. Now, an antimicrobial impregnated wipe, also called towelettes, can be considered about the same as washing your hands with a non-antimicrobial soap and water. But because none of the ones available at the time that the guideline was developed were as effective as an alcohol hand rub or an antimicrobial soap, they are not considered a substitute for using one of these antiseptic hand wash techniques. Next slide. Now, when using an alcohol-based hand rub, you need to apply the product to the palm of one hand and then rub hands together, covering all surfaces of the hands and fingers until the hands are completely dry. If you see your colleagues rubbing their hands for a few seconds and then waving their hands in the air to try to get it to dry faster, tell them that that's not the way to do it. They're supposed to rub their hands together until they feel dry. Now, when washing hands with soap and water, first apply the water, then an amount of soap that's recommended by the manufacturer, and then you should rub your hands together vigorously for at least 15 seconds, covering all surfaces of the hands or fingers. And then, of course, you need to rinse your hands and dry them and use the towel to turn off the faucet. It's actually a good idea to avoid using hot water because studies have shown that repeated use of hot water may actually increase the risk of hand dermatitis. Next slide. The guideline also recommends that healthcare workers not wear artificial fingernails or extenders when having direct contact with patients that are at high risk, such as those in intensive care units or those undergoing surgery. Also, healthcare workers should be expected to keep their natural nail tips less than 1/4 inch long. We should wear gloves when contact with blood or other potentially infectious materials, mucous membranes, or non-intact skin is likely to occur. And then it's important to make sure that our colleagues remove their gloves after caring for each patient. Next slide. Now, surgical hand antisepsis using either an antimicrobial soap or an alcohol-based hand rub that has persistent activity is recommended before putting on sterile gloves when performing surgical procedures. And our colleagues need to make sure they follow manufacturers' recommendations for use of either the antimicrobial soap or the alcohol-based hand rub. Next slide. Now, some of you may get questions from your surgeons about the effect of using an alcohol-based hand rub on surgical site infection rates. Some surgeons have worried that if they give up their standard soap and water routine, that infection rates may go up. If they have this concern, I think you want to make sure to point out to them that the paper published at the bottom of the slide in JAMA was a prospective randomized trial that found that surgical site infection rates were almost identical in patients whose surgeons performed surgical hand antisepsis with either a traditional antimicrobial scrub or with an alcohol-based hand rub. And for those of you in the United States, you should know that the Food and Drug Administration requires that products intended for surgical hand antisepsis maintain bacterial counts on the hands below baseline levels for 6 hours after application. So if you're thinking about introducing an alcohol hand rub into the operating room, you need to check with a manufacturer to see if it meets the FDA recommendations for persistent activity. Next slide. The guideline also recommends that healthcare facilities provide personnel with efficacious hand hygiene products that have a low tendency to cause skin irritation, particularly if the products are used multiple times during a work shift. Also, to maximize acceptance of hand hygiene products, I would highly encourage you to get some input from multiple employees regarding the feel, the fragrance, and the skin tolerance of any products that you're considering using. Next slide. Now, when you're selecting an alcohol-based hand rub, you need to consider some of these features. First is the consistency. As you know, these products can come in the form of a rinse, which is kind of a watery consistency, or as a gel, or as a foam. And healthcare workers sometimes will express a clear preference for one type of product over another. Another important feature is the smell or the fragrance of the product. And in fact, a strong or disagreeable smell can actually discourage healthcare workers from using the product. So I personally recommend avoiding products like that. For alcohol hand rubs, the drying time may be an issue. If you have a product that takes too long to dry, then healthcare workers may not want to use it, or they may not use it in the correct fashion. You also need to try any product that you're considering using for a while to see if repeated use causes skin irritation. For most of these alcohol hand rubs that are well formulated, this shouldn't be a problem. However, some of the hand rubs, particularly some of the gels or some foams, have a tendency to cause kind of a sticky sensation on the hands, either right during application or after application. And you want to probably avoid products like this because it's often considered undesirable by healthcare workers. And then a few studies have suggested that even the color of a product might affect how well it's accepted by healthcare workers. Now, in the United States, at least at the present time, gels are the most popular, whereas in Europe, most healthcare facilities use the rinses. Next slide. Now, the guideline also mentions that you should not add soap to a partially empty soap dispenser. This practice, which is often called topping off, can lead to bacterial contamination of the soap, so you don't want to do this. And then institutions should begin to provide healthcare workers with hand lotions or creams to minimize the occurrence of irritant contact dermatitis that is especially common with hand washing, but can even occur during the winter months sometimes with alcohol hand rubs. And before you make a decision about purchasing an alcohol hand rub or a soap, you need to evaluate the dispenser systems of the products that you're considering to make sure that the dispensers work properly. Next slide. Let me give you an example of why this is important. After we did a brief trial at our hospital using tabletop pump bottles, a product was selected, and we put wall-mounted dispensers for this kind of viscous alcohol-based hand rinse throughout our facility. But within several months, many of these wall-mounted dispensers became either partially or totally plugged. And when we did an audit throughout the hospital, it revealed that 50% of the dispensers did not function properly. Some of the dispensers squirted the product right between the healthcare workers' fingers and it started dripping out of their hand immediately. Or sometimes it squirted it in such a way that it entirely missed the healthcare worker's hand and sometimes squirted the product onto the wall instead of onto the person's hand. And so in our facility, poor dispenser function almost certainly contributed to lack of use of this alcohol hand rinse by healthcare workers. This was a product that we had about 4 years ago, and based on this poor dispenser function, we actually got rid of that product and now use another product. Next slide. The guideline also recommends that as part of an overall program to improve hand hygiene, we really need to educate our colleagues about the types of patient care activities that can result in hand contamination, and we need to discuss with them both the advantages and the disadvantages of various methods used to clean their hands. And then another very important recommendation is that healthcare facilities need to begin to monitor healthcare worker adherence to recommended hand hygiene practices, and we need to provide personnel with some feedback regarding their performance. This is considered very important. You may also want to consider encouraging patients or their families to remind healthcare workers to decontaminate their hands when they come into the room. Next slide. Healthcare facilities also need to make improved hand hygiene adherence a real institutional priority, and they need to provide the administrative support and financial resources that are going to be needed if you're going to develop an appropriate program. And the program that you develop should be multidisciplinary. For instance, just making an alcohol-based hand rub available but not having any education or motivational elements to your program is probably not going to work. It has to be multidisciplinary. And then the guideline recommends that institutions make an alcohol-based hand rub product readily accessible to healthcare workers. Next slide. Facilities should make these hand rubs available at the entrance to the patient's room or at the patient's bedside, and you should also consider making them available at other locations like on medication carts or different locations in a nursing station. And you should even consider making individual pocket-sized containers of the alcohol hand rub available. For instance, in our hospital, in our emergency department and in one of our intensive care units, the construction of these units is such that there's very little wall space available for wall-mounted dispensers. And so compliance was not as good in these units, and so we've actually made the pocket-sized bottles of the hand rub available in those areas. Next slide. Well, I've pretty much covered the recommendations in the new guideline. Now I want to discuss a little bit about the fire hazard issue that has come up mainly in the United States. Shortly after publication of the guideline, some facilities started reporting that their local fire marshal had told them that placing alcohol hand rub dispensers in hallways outside of patient rooms was a potential fire hazard because they were concerned that if the dispenser caught fire, it may prevent healthcare workers or patients from getting out of the area. I think we found that fire codes are not the same in all localities, and both the interpretation and the enforcement of fire codes really varies from one geographic area to the next. Next slide. Well, we decided that we probably needed to obtain more data on the incidence of any fires that might be attributed to or that involve alcohol hand rub dispensers in healthcare facilities. So we developed a brief questionnaire, and then the Society for Healthcare Epidemiology of America, or SHEA, personnel posted the questionnaire on an internet website for a one-week period in March of this year, and then broadcast emails announcing the survey were sent to members of SHEA, APIC, and the Emerging Infections Network members of the Infectious Disease Society. Next slide. Well, we got responses from 840 facilities in the United States during this one-week time period, and 95% of the responding facilities said that they were using an alcohol hand rub. Now, I think it's fair to say that in March of this year, 95% of all healthcare facilities in the United States were not using an alcohol hand rub. So this probably represents a bias on the part of people that were using one to complete the questionnaire, whereas facilities that weren't using it probably didn't feel much reason to participate in the survey. Now, of the facilities that responded, about 80% said they had dispensers located in patient rooms, about 60% had it in hallways outside of patient rooms, and about 90% had it in treatment rooms. Next slide. About 11% of respondents said that they had been asked by a local fire marshal to remove alcohol hand rub dispensers from hallways. About 8% had been instructed by a fire marshal to change the location or the size of dispensers, and 10% had been told by a fire marshal to change the storage conditions of large stocks of the alcohol hand rub. Next slide. This slide shows a map that shows the proportion of responding facilities that were instructed to remove alcohol hand rub dispensers from hallways in each of the states. And you can, those of you that can see this in color, you'll see that the dark or red states had more than 50% of the respondents had been told to remove hand rub dispensers from hallways. So, and yet many other states, the percent of respondents was much lower in terms of how many had been told to remove dispensers from hallways. So there was a tremendous geographic variation with this issue. Next slide. Well, none of the 798 responding facilities that used alcohol hand rubs reported a fire involving a hand rub dispenser. And 766 facilities reported when they started using an alcohol hand rub routinely, so that we could determine about how many months or years they had been using it. And the results revealed that the 766 facilities had accrued an estimated combined total of over 1,400 years of use of alcohol-based hand rub without a fire attributed to the hand rub dispenser. So this data, combined with decades of use of this kind of product in Europe, suggests that the risk of any fire resulting from a hand rub dispenser is extremely low. Well, in July of this year, the American Hospital Association got together with CDC and others to have a meeting to address this issue. And there were representatives from infection control, hospital, public health, and fire safety organizations. And a fire modeling study was presented by a fire safety consulting firm. And as a result, the AHA and CDC issued advisory notices on this issue recently. And because the fire codes seem to state that you can't have something flammable in an egress corridor, like a hallway, the AHA and CDC recommended, for at least for the time being, that they advised against placing alcohol hand rub dispensers in hallways. Next slide. Now I'm going to give you my unofficial view on this. I think that if you haven't installed dispensers yet, that it's probably better to avoid placing new dispensers in egress hallways until we can get fire codes revised, at least in the United States. Now, if you already have hand rub dispensers in hallways, but you haven't heard anything from your local fire marshal, just leave the dispensers in the hallways where they are. That's what we're doing at my institution. If you have hand rub dispensers in hallways and the fire marshal tells you to remove them, I guess you could request a delay and tell them that the fire codes are in the process of probably being modified. But if they don't grant such a delay, then you don't have much choice but to remove them from the hallway. Placing the dispensers in other locations, including in patient rooms, should really not create a problem with your local fire marshal. Next slide. Well, finally, I want to spend a little time talking to you about our experience with our hand hygiene initiative at Hospital of St. Raphael in New Haven. In October of 2000, we formed a multidisciplinary hand hygiene committee, and then in November and December of 2000, we conducted a hand hygiene slogan campaign, and the person who submitted the slogan that was accepted received a cash prize, and she's shown in our hospital newspaper receiving the prize. Then in January and February of 2001, we did a baseline hand hygiene adherence survey. And then in February of 2001, we installed a new alcohol-based hand gel hospital-wide. Next slide. Well, subsequently, we've done periodic hand hygiene educational sessions, which included feedback to personnel regarding these observational surveys. And these educational sessions were given in clinical departments and on many nursing units. Then we repeated these observational surveys in December of 2001 and December of 2002. And then promoting improved hand hygiene has been formally adopted as a hospital-wide improvement initiative by our hospital administration and our quality improvement committee, so that we're getting the backup and support that we need. Next slide. Well, after we'd had the hand rinse up for about a year, we developed computer-based interactive hand hygiene training modules for both clinical and non-clinical personnel. And these computer-based hand hygiene educational modules are accessible on any hospital computer 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And this system, which in our hospital is run on something called the SynQuest system, actually provides a short test and some immediate feedback to the employee when they take the test, and we actually have a record of which employees have taken the test. Next slide. Then we also obtained some colorful cartoons by a special arrangement with Dr. Didier Pité in Geneva. And like Dr. Pité, we asked nurses on each unit to develop a caption for the cartoon. This was to kind of get them involved and get some buy-in. And then also, like Dr. Pité, we made arrangements to have these cartoons posted on a special location on each ward and in public areas of the hospital with kind of a special, unusual background painted onto the wall. And then these are changed every 2 or 3 weeks. Next slide. This slide shows the overall hand hygiene adherence rates for the baseline survey done in January of 2001 and surveys 2 and 3 done in the December 2001 and 2002. And you can see that the overall hand hygiene adherence rate increased from 37% on the baseline survey to 58% by the end of 2002, which was a significant increase. Next slide. This slide shows the hand hygiene adherence rates by healthcare worker type for each of the three surveys. And you can see that clinical support employees, like those that work for transport or dietary or that do phlebotomy, that adherence rates increased in that group, in the medical staff, in the nursing staff, and to some extent in respiratory therapy. But it's interesting that the respiratory therapists had a very high rate of adherence and were clearly the best by worker type in our hospital. Next slide. This slide shows again that the overall rate of hand hygiene adherence improved from 37% to 58%. But it also shows you that the bottom part of each bar, which in color is red, represents the proportion of all hand hygiene episodes that were done with the alcohol hand gel. So in the baseline survey, there was a very small percent, about 8% of every time we saw somebody cleaning their hands, they used alcohol. But by survey number 3, over 70% of the hand hygiene episodes that were observed were done with an alcohol hand gel. Next slide. Mainly for our interest, we also decided early on to monitor the amount of the alcohol hand gel that was used, and we expressed this in terms of the number of liters used per 1,000 patient days. And this slide shows the results for each quarter of 2001 and 2002. And as you can see, there was a progressive and significant increase in the amount of alcohol hand gel used per 1,000 patient days in our facility. Next slide. This shows a form that our infection control practitioners designed and that they use when they conducted their hand hygiene adherence surveys. Now, it's probably difficult for you to read this on the screen or on your handout, but this can be downloaded from our website as a Word file so that you could actually look at it and modify it for your own use if you want to. Next slide. Well, after doing the first couple surveys using that paper form, we decided that we would take those same variables and we entered them into a software database that's made by a company called Pendragon. And then we downloaded this database to Palm-based devices for our infection control practitioners. And so now, when they go around to all the different wards to do their hand hygiene observations, they actually record the results on the palm, and when they get back to their office, they just hot sync their palm, and it dumps all their observations into an Access database. And I can tell you that our infection control practitioners are just delighted to use these palms, and it has incredibly facilitated our data analysis, so they're very happy about doing it in this way. Next slide. Well, this is the last slide, and I just wanted to mention some of these internet web resources that you may find helpful. One is the official CDC hand hygiene website. You can download the guideline and some PowerPoint presentations from the CDC site. We launched our handhygiene.org website on the same day that the guideline was published, and it has also PowerPoint presentations, a section on how to select a hand rub. It has that monitoring tool that you can download if you want to, and it has some links and other materials. So if you haven't had occasion to look at that, you might find it useful. The Hopi Safe website is one developed by Dr. Didier Pitté in Geneva, and I would also encourage you to have a look at that website. And then the last one was developed by Marianne McGuckin at University of Pennsylvania and has kind of an emphasis on trying to encourage patients and families to remind healthcare workers to clean their hands. So to Paul Weber, I think this about concludes my comments, and if we have time, then I'll try to answer any questions. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. I'll open the floor for questions in just a moment. I did want to comment that your website, handhygiene.org, is a fantastic resource. I spent quite a bit of time there in the last 24 hours, and it's really excellent.
Thank you.
Regarding monitoring healthcare worker adherence to hand hygiene, how did you do it? Was it all self-assessment? Did you stand over them and watch? How was that done so that hand hygiene wasn't artificially inflated?
You know, I can't guarantee that healthcare workers were oblivious. In fact, what our infection control practitioners do is they go up onto the ward, they start making observations. They try to stay up there less than 30 minutes on any ward at any given time. But it's apparent that sometimes the personnel on the ward kind of figure out what's going on and that they probably guess that that they're being observed. But we don't actually tell them. And sometimes our infection control practitioners will go onto the ward, and if somebody asks them what they're doing, they'll say that they're doing something else. For instance, one of our ICPs has actually gone up and audited our hand rub dispensers to make sure that they're working. And she actually does do the audit, but at the same time, she makes hand hygiene observations. And so this makes it a little less apparent that she's watching people. But I think it is possible that people do figure out that they're being observed, and this could modify their behavior. But it's kind of surprising how often they don't clean their hands, even when there's an infection control practitioner on the ward. So I think we still have useful results, and our practitioners haven't really changed any over this time period. And they don't do it that often. So I think that our improvement is to some extent real, and this is kind of backed up by the fact that our use of the alcohol hand gel has increased significantly.
My question is regarding the alcohol gels. We have one employee who's actually allergic to the vapors of the alcohol and is working in the admitting department. I was wondering if, even though there's no scientific evidence, could the antimicrobial wipes be sufficient for her to wash her hands in between patients as there's no sink nearby?
the guideline ended up recommending that people use some kind of antimicrobial product between patient care, if at all possible. So the desirable thing would be for her to use an antimicrobial soap if she can't use an alcohol. But if sinks are not available, then probably using a wipe is better than not cleaning your hands at all.
I was wondering if Dr. Boyce could speak to percentage of alcohol. We're about to go out for tender, and there's a lot of talk about the virucidal activity and concern that if we chose a lower percent alcohol, we're shooting ourselves in the foot.
Okay, I'm not sure I would agree with the last statement, but I think it's fair to say that products with a higher alcohol content, particularly if it's ethanol, tend to be more effective against, especially against non-envelope viruses, so that if nosocomial viral infections are a major issue in your facility, then using one with a higher alcohol content may be desirable.
I would like to say thanks very much to Dr. Boyce. That was a really fantastic presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Deb Medical Hand Hygiene for their sponsorship of today's teleclass. Guys, your generous support means a lot to all of us. Thank you very, very much. Thank you all for joining us today. And again, thank you, Dr. Boyce, for a tremendous presentation. Until we talk again, stay safe. Goodbye.